Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
The L, is it the most important constructed item in the history of Chicago? We are going to find out. Patrick T. Reardon is an author, a poet, essayist, Chicago historian, and specifically the author of a book called The Loop, The L Tracks That Shaped and Saved Chicago. And he joins us now. Good evening, Patrick.
Hi, how you doing, John?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Let's talk about this L being and its importance in the history of Chicago. And it says the has been the single most important structure in the history of Chicago. Start with that.
That's what I'm arguing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, what other structures are there? You know, I mean, are you going to put up against United Center, whatever? So it's, you know, it's in a way, it's. I'm not sure that there's other stuff that you can compete with. I mean, you could say all the skyscrapers, I guess, or whatever. But no, what I'm arguing is that once Charles Yerkes built the elevated loop, what that did was focused all the real estate buying for downtown into that small area. It's only a quarter of a mile.
Right.
And so what it was is all the rich people in Chicago, all the power brokers had money invested inside this small area. And if you were in the area, your property was worth a whole lot. If you were outside, just on the other side of the tracks, it was worth less. So as time went on, when in the middle of the 20th century, when the suburbs boomed and all the downtowns around the country fell apart because the businesses were fleeing to the suburbs, there was so much invested inside this elevated loop inside the downtown that it didn't happen as much in Chicago as it did in, say, Cleveland or Detroit. And Chicago was in much better shape to bounce back. And it's still the same today. You know, when we're looking at what's going to happen once COVID's over, it's like, well, people have so much money invested in this small area that it's not like they can get up and move, you know, a few miles or, you know, a half a mile one way or the other. They've got this money there, and they've got to find ways to keep it going.
Almost too big to fail, so
exactly.
to speak.
Exactly, in that sense, yeah.
I'm ignorant when it comes to the entire history of the L and those individuals involved. It amazes me that it opened in 1897.
Right.
I mean, the engineering, the construction, the ability to put that all together in 1897.
Well, the interesting thing is that it was built by a guy named John Low Alexander Waddell, who no one in Chicago has ever heard of. He's an international expert on bridge building, and he's still remembered today by engineers as this great bridge builder. But nobody remembers that he built the elevated loop. And what happened was, he built this, and he did an in-depth study of the elevated trains that were in use, the structures in use in New York and Boston and other places, and he found ways to strengthen the one we've got. So the one we're using now, if you ride the L down to the loop and go around the loop, 75% of the elevated loop structure is what was originally put in by Waddell.
That is astounding.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it turned out the chief engineer for the CTA, when I interviewed him for this, said, "Yeah, we replaced this and we replaced that, but basically, you know, all those places with all those rivets, those all go back to 1897.
Wow.
The places that don't have the rivets are the ones that have been replaced, In other words, they don't do riveting now because it's too costly. But the riveting is partly why it's so strong and why it's lasted so long.
Well, it may be costly, but it, apparently it obviously works over a long period of time.
Well, 120 years ago, 119 or 8, whatever it is, years ago, 123 years ago, it was a lot cheaper to do because you had all these Irish laborers and other laborers, you know, and all the expertise and all that. And also you didn't have any of the insurance rules and, you know, if some guy fell.
They probably did.
Oh, they of course they did. But, you know, there wasn't the protections there are today, which add to the cost.
So Charles Yerkes, am I pronouncing?
Yerkes, right, yes.
Who and what did he do?
Well,
who is he and what did he do?
He was this guy who came out, this entrepreneur who came out of Philadelphia, and he had gotten in some trouble where he went to prison because he kind of took some money that belonged to somebody else, but maybe he didn't take it because there was a kind of depression that took place. And maybe he was taking the fall for the governor, who was a friend of Ulysses Grant, who then, anyway, to make a long story short, he got out of jail early because of the president pulling strings because the president's friend, blah, blah, blah. So he comes to Chicago, and he's Philadelphia, by the way, had this reputation in the late 1800s as this really corrupt place, and people were extremely skilled at corruption. And so he comes to Chicago, and he's like a major league corrupter, and Chicago's more like, you know, AAA or whatever. In fact, Carter Harrison II, the second mayor of Chicago named Carter Harrison, does this a lot, you know, or just keeps the same name for the same mayor. He wrote his memoirs that it wasn't so much that Yerkes was more corrupt than everybody. He was just better at it, and people didn't like that. So he's gotten this bad, bad reputation as a corrupt guy, as if no one else was ever in Chicago history. But the thing that people ignore or overlook is by building the elevated loop, he changed the nature of Chicago to make it so that it was protected against the suburbanization in the future. Also, he created this place that was a second neighborhood for Chicago. If you grew up in Chicago, as I did on the West Side, you knew the West Side, Austin was my neighborhood. But I also knew my second neighborhood was downtown in the Loop.
Loop, yep.
And anybody from my era or, I think it's probably true today to the extent that, you know, if you go downtown, you feel like, well, I own this. This is Chicago, this is me. You know, I may live in Saugeenash, but I don't feel comfortable anywhere else, but downtown I feel good. So what happened, how Yerkes made it happen is he single-handedly got everybody together and basically forced them to agree to do a loop, and then built the loop in order to do it as cheaply as possible and get around the property owners who were looking for bribes from whoever was going to build it. He did it in four sections. So he gets to the fourth section. He's got three of them done, and he's got the Van Buren section to do. And he's run into this big real estate guy who also was the owner of a bunch of buildings named Levi Leader. Leader had once been a partner with Marshall Field in the Marshall Fields store. Anyway, Leiter didn't want it on. He didn't want the southern border of the loop to be on Van Buren. He wanted it further south on Harrison because, well, his son had property in that area, and if it was further south, his son would benefit.
Yep.
Yeah, it sounds kind of crazy, right? Where would that ever happen?
I mean, but in this town, never.
Oh, yeah. Leiter gets everybody on the street to say they're not going to give permission to build it on Van Buren. So what Yerkes does is he he pulls a fast one on everybody. He gets permission from the city council to extend the southern border out to Halsted Street, because he says we're going to try to provide service over there. Well, he's not going to provide service over to Halsted. That's never going to happen. But what he does is he gets the guys who own the property between Wells Street, what's today Wells Street,
yeah,
and Halsted, and mm-hmm. gets them to give their permission. So he gets the 50% permission, 51% of the owners to give permission for doing it, and so he overcomes Leiter, and Leiter loses. So he's devious, he's willful, he's corrupt, he's paying off city council and all that, but he's also visionary because he builds this union loop, which then makes it possible for anywhere in Chicago to come to Chicago, to the downtown, in an easy way, or to go through downtown, to go from the south side all the way to the far north side.
You know,
and he does this in a way that that no one, because he doesn't take no for an answer, and because he is kind of devious, he gets away with it, whereas no one else had the chutzpah or the skill to be able to do that at that time. It never would have been built otherwise.
We're talking to Patrick Reardon, who is obviously well versed on the history of the Chicago L, and of the new book, The Loop, The L Tracks That Shaped and Saved Chicago. Very interesting. Scratching the surface. We'll do some more when we come back on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, John Landecker, having a very interesting conversation, if I do say so myself, with Patrick T. Reardon, who is the author of a fascinating book called The Loop, The L Tracks That Shaped and Saved Chicago. You know, Patrick, it does not strike me in the least that the person who was hired to start this project just got out of prison. I mean,
it wasn't just, it had been 15 to 20 years. The thing, though, was Yerkes came to Chicago, and he was one of the country's biggest art collectors. He brought sculptures by Rodin to the United States. He's the first one to do that, the first one to bring certain kinds of Rembrandt paintings to the United States.
Where'd he get his money?
Well, he was good at leveraging all that stuff. But the thing was, he wanted to get into society in Chicago, and they wouldn't let him in.
Right,
because he had divorced his wife from back in Philadelphia and married this slinky 25-year-old who wore these slinky gowns.
Oh, wow.
And all the men loved looking at her, and all the wives hated their men looking at her.
Of course.
And so Yerkes was on the out. So that's partly why he's been demonized all this time, too. So it wasn't, he had been an ex-con 20 years earlier. He had this slinky wife, and he was better at corruption and business than everybody else.
Who were the notorious gray wolves of the Chicago City Council?
Oh, geez. Those, you think the city council the last 50 years has been bad? Well, those guys were really bad. They were. I mean, it was just up front, you know, that you.
Yes.
Yeah. And they would do things like you had all these cable car franchises operating in the city. And so they would have some friend of theirs propose another franchise that would compete with, say, your franchise.
Yep.
So Alderman, you know, Hinky Dink Kenna would be supporting it, and so you would have to go to Kenna and give him an envelope with some money in it that would balance that, so that he would get his friend to drop the franchise application to go against you. Or if you wanted to extend your thing, which they were always trying to do, extending out into the suburbs. The suburbs at that time were places like Hyde Park,
mm-hmm.
and Austin and all that on the west. You would have to pay him to get permission to to extend. So there was, but you know, they were taking it from you, but they were taking it from me. They were taking it from everybody. You know, right. This was the way politics worked in Chicago.
It's amazing that it got done. But then, you know, that's what they used to say. What did they used to say? Was it Mayor Richard Jay who said, the city that works?
Yeah,
somebody
exactly.
said that. And I think that might be what they're referring to.
Yeah, well, it was. If here's the thing, you know, it was sort of the honor among thieves. If I take your money, I promise that I will push your thing through.
Right.
So okay, you know, then I'll push it through.
Right. Have you ever thought about? Well, maybe you have. I mean, when I hear you talk about these characters and the graft and the corruption, I see the possibilities of a movie. I mean, this has got to be crazy. I mean, you got people getting out of prison, then 13 years later, they come here, they marry some young woman who's slinky, and they're paying off this and they're paying off that. And I mean, who knows? Well, I'm sure in the book, we're just scratching the surface of the plot, shall we say, or arc, the story, if you will, the characters, what they did. What they had to do, what they didn't have to do, what they did illegally, and how they got away with it and still had an L. I mean, it's just...
Well, that's the thing. It's my book, actually, there are other books that are much more into the corruption of it. Henry Kogan's book, I'm blanking on the title. There's several other books there that go much more deeply into it. But yeah, the point was... There was a kind of balance that was going on here. You know, you were trying, the business guys were trying to accomplish something, and the political guys were trying to make money, and the money filtered down in various ways to their constituents,
yes.
not all of it. And there was, it was an unfair fairness, if that makes any sense, you know.
I understand what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it was a way of finding balance, because the people who had money had lots of money and they had lots of power, and the only way that poor people or immigrants had any power was through their politicians, and so the politicians were able to wield their power in direct ways, so, often for the good. Because it was, you know, the if the city worked, that benefited the politicians. But, you know, it worked because they had to pay.
Well, I understand why you call it the single most important structure in the history of Chicago. Because any other structure in the history of Chicago, first of all, how many are there that have lasted that long, that are so unique?
Mm-hmm.
So unique in the sense that I worked for a radio station that called itself The Loop.
Well, right,
which was, you know, obviously named after the area that the L surrounds.
Mm-hmm.
There have been movies made, you know, using the L as part of the plot.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, The Fugitive, yeah. Almost,
yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. So I understand what you're saying, that and I think you're probably right.
Well, when you consider
all the economic, the real estate, the, you know, the suburb aspect of it, it's really something else when you stop and look at it that way. But, you know, even in the middle of the 70s, they tried to take it down, though, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And it was going to be one. Remember when Mayor Daley II...
Yes.
You woke up one morning and Migs Field
was plowed under.
Was torn up. Well, the old man was going to do that with the elevated loop. He was going to take out one of the borders of the loop. So it was going to, I think it was going to be Wells Street. So you would only have three L tracks that wouldn't form a loop. In fact, ultimately, they were going to take down two of the four, so there'd be an actual L. And, you know, but they didn't have any. This was because they were trying to put in subways, and they were figuring if we tear the stuff down, then the federal government will have to give us the money to build it. But that probably wouldn't have worked because they did the same thing with the Deep Tunnel project, and that started in the 70s, and it still isn't finished. So that's 50 years ago. So, you know, we might have been living without any kind of downtown or without much downtown.
Yeah.
What rapid transit?
What stopped it? What stopped the?
What stopped it was there were three people. A Tribune reporter got wind that Daley was going to take down the one leg of the L and publicized it, so Daley had to back off of that. Wow. And then this architect, that was in 76, and then in 78. Harry Weiss, this architect who was kind of a gadfly, he was a very big provocateur, and so he fought against Meyer Bolandek's plan to tear it down, and delayed it enough and made it enough of a public issue that by the next year, when Bolandek got voted out of office and Jane Byrne came in, the stage was set for her to say, no, we're not going to take it down. We're going to make it better. And so she saved it. So it was Paul Gaff, the Tribune reporter, Harry Weiss, the architect, and then Jane Byrne, the radical, but who then became,
yes,
you know, part of the traditional Democrats. From that point on, 78, it was protected, and it became a kind of a symbol of Chicago in a positive way. It was always seen before as this ugly thing, and after that, it was seen much more as, well, that's what Chicago looks like. It's got a CL, you know.
Well, Patrick, thank you so much for being with us. Patrick T. Reardon has this book called The Loop, The L Tracks That Shaped and Saved Chicago. It was available November 26th. And thank you for being with us.